China Talk, emergency war balloon edition here on Friday, February 3rd, 2023. To discuss, we have William Balloon Guy Kim of the Marathon Initiative, Eric Lokrum, Acquisition Talk, and Gerard DePippo of CSIS, formerly with the Intel community. Welcome to perhaps the most important China Talk show of the 6 years I've been doing this, everyone. Great to have you all. What the hell just happened?
Well, what happened was, I guess it was yesterday that the Pentagon and NORAD announced that there was a balloon that they were tracking from China that was, I think at the time, over Wyoming or Montana. The bottom line was it caused a diplomatic, minor crisis where the U.S., first of all, the Chinese government was sort of vague and kind of denying at first. Eventually, the MFA released a statement where they said the airship, which is what they call the balloon, is in fact Chinese. They claim it's for meteorological purposes, so a weather balloon. They say that it was drifting because of just westerly winds and that they regret the unintended entry of the airship into U.S. airspace due to force majeure. Force majeure is like a legal concept that it's like an act of God. It's out of their control. And that they are communicating with the U.S. side to address the issue. But then, I don't know, less than a few hours later, the U.S. government announced that Secretary Blinken would not be flying to Beijing as planned. He was supposed to be wheels up the site tonight, I believe. So now the trip is postponed indefinitely. The State Department has not said when or under what conditions they will resume the trip. But they've said that basically the issue is that while, you know, they recognize that the Chinese side has said regretted it, which is a meaningful statement coming from them, that it was still a violation of U.S. sovereignty and they found it unacceptable and inappropriate for them to go at this time.
I don't even know where to start. Will, why would a Chinese balloon be over Wyoming?
Well, I mean, it is possible that they're telling the truth and it did just malfunction and kind of drift away. But, you know, balloons do offer advantages in terms of things like intelligence collection compared to satellites. Satellites are very difficult to conceal and they fly predictable orbits. Spy satellites tend to be quite large. And so you know when they're there. Now, this balloon doesn't seem to be something that would be easy to hide. I mean, we've been tracking it so far. But you could offer much more persistence in terms of getting that kind of 24/7. If you have a balloon that's there all the time versus a satellite that, you know, maybe is over there, you know, several times a day. And the U.S. can know, hey, we're not going to take out, do anything too secretive while a satellite is overhead. So there's definitely reasons why they might want to use this for intelligence collection.
Do we know, has the Pentagon or anyone confirmed that it is, or at least the view is that it is a spy balloon and not a weather balloon? Like, how confident are we of that?
Yeah, all the statements I've seen have said, you know, surveillance balloon. I have not seen anything, at least officially, indicating that there's ambiguity or that it may be a weather balloon.
In the Chinese statement, it said, it's like for scientific as well as other purposes.
It also looks rather large for compared to weather balloons that I've seen. So that's the one thing that makes me a little suspicious of that cover story.
So, Will, why is it so hard to take one of these things down? Like, is there a cost-effective way of just, like, bringing it down, or why are they leaving it up there?
As of now, I don't think there is. I mean, you know, you can... For one thing, these balloons are rather cheap. You could make one. It depends on the payload, but you can make it under $1 million or even under $100,000. And if you're going to shoot a $4.5 million, you know, surface to air missile at it, obviously that's not a bit. You're not going to have surface air missiles for very long. But in terms of even hitting them, I mean. These are not balloons you have at a birthday party or you just poke a hole in it and then it pops. There's another instance in where a Canadian weather balloon went rogue and they had fighter jets shooting at it with 20 millimeter cannons and it still took 6 days before it finally came down.
Could you like grab it? Like how high are they?
This one doesn't appear to be very high, but I mean, there are some of these can go up to past, well past 100,000 feet, which is you know, beyond the ceiling of any aircraft, really.
Even if you wanted to shoot a missile at it, like, could they target it? How would you target a balloon? I mean, it's not reflecting radar, right?
Right. So that's the thing, that the balloons themselves do not actually reflect radar. The payload will. But the problem is the payload is very slow. And these missile guidance systems are designed to hit fast moving targets. They're designed to shoot down missiles or aircraft. And they're actually designed to ignore kind of chaff, which is what these balloon payloads very, very well may look like. So I think it's an open question whether or not how well these surface-to-air missiles would even work if you shot it. Though, as I should clarify, as far as I know, it's never been tried before.
Well, tell it to me straight. Is there a balloon gap, and can I sleep at night until it's closed?
Short answer is I don't know, and long answer is the people who do know probably aren't going to say. But I do think there is reason to be concerned that the Chinese clearly have interest in this technology and are developing this technology. And I think we need to be doing more on our end, both to develop counters to this, so again, more cost-effective ways, things like energy weapons that could be used against this, as well as our own capabilities when it comes to high-altitude balloons. And I'm very concerned that the Chinese could potentially use these not just for surveillance, but even potentially strikes in the future. You know, the Japanese used to send balloons during World War II at the United States. Now, they only killed 6 people because they were very inaccurate, but, you know, high-altitude balloons can definitely carry payloads large enough to put bombs or missiles or something like that. The U.S. Army has a concept for suicide drones launched from a balloon.
All right, let's this is a good little transition. Eric, apparently you have balloons in your genes. Give us a little history of America and its interactions with balloon warfare.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it turns out my grandfather worked at Goodyear as a military contractor doing this stuff for the Navy back in the day. So I hit up, you know, George, you called just like 2 hours before this, like, hey, we should do a balloon thing. I was like, I called my dad. I was like, give me the lowdown on balloons. And he knows everything about military history of balloons. So they're mostly for recon stuff, right? Mainly tethered. They actually started during the Napoleonic Wars. The first big time they were used was in the Civil War for like artillery targeting. They were kind of like inflated using coal. It was the first time that they actually put a person on board one of these airships. In World War I, they started actually meeting opposition for the first time from powered flight. But these things were actually using hydrogen at that time. So it was super dangerous for a pilot to go get in close, shoot the hydrogen package, and then it would actually like burst and there'd be a big fire. And so it was pretty dangerous for them.
Oh my God.
Of course, now what Will was talking about, those are kind of inert. They're using like helium for these. So the inert gas, it won't ignite. So when you shoot them down, nothing's going to explode. It'll just kind of like drift down over a long time. But for the most part, they were used like in World War II as kind of like barrage balloons, where you'd like cable them to the ground and they would prevent bombers from coming over. So the Brits had these over for the Battle of Britain for a long time to kind of foil the Luftwaffe. And when you look at like pictures of D-Day, you'll see like all the supply ships out there with a bunch of these barrage balloons. Now, they didn't really do much because basically the Allies killed most of the Luftwaffe fighters and bombers at that time. So they weren't really attacking the D-Day fleet, but that's what they're used for. And then, of course,
Eric, explain the barrage balloon concept.
So the barrage balloon, so you basically have these balloons go up really high and you would like have tethers to them and other types of chaff and cables. And so like when bombers tried to come through, they would basically be hit with these nets and these cables, and it would prevent them from kind of getting to their path and like hitting ships or hitting London, wherever you'd have them. So it's like
you're catching fish in a net in the sky with balloons.
Pretty much. I mean, people were innovative back then, right? It's like let's just try things out and do them, right? They were actually used for U-boats too. They protected convoys. So like before nuclear submarines, you would keep a balloon up there. You could have a pretty big payload and have a big radar on there, and it would force the U-boats to stay submerged because otherwise, like, even having a periscope up, you'd be able to catch them with these balloons, and they had long loiter times. And so they used these to basically degrade the capabilities of Nazi U-boats. And they used them up until like 1962, essentially, when the Soviets started to get introduced with nuclear submarines. And so that's kind of like the downfall of the age of the airship balloons. But they were used to do like weird things, including they would drop propaganda. And like in World War II, you know, and stuff like that. It wasn't really effective, but, you know, that's what they did. And there's a little background on the balloons.
I do want to stay on the sort of Japan bombing America with balloons story. I don't know, Will or Eric, either of you guys want to sort of tell that in a little more detail?
Well, it was kind of similar to what they had here, right? It's, you would put incendiaries on these balloons and you let the weather, like the jet streams, take them over. And they would basically target the Pacific Northwest, and they were hoping to create forest fires. Now, to my knowledge, I don't really know much about it. Will might know a lot more than me, but it wasn't too effective.
Yeah, I mean, I think it happened like after the U.S. started bombing the Japanese homeland, right? And this was like the context I remember it in is like they're trying to like have some sort of propaganda win. And the other interesting wrinkle with this is that America, like, there was a big media blackout in the U.S. because they didn't want the story to get out. So I think it was like highly classified for like decades or something that the Japanese balloons actually ended up being able to hit U.S. targets.
Yeah. So six people were killed in by one of those balloons that just kind of like happened to land like while they're out at a picnic or something. And they are the only Americans who were killed on continental U.S. soil in the entire war.
One of my questions is jump to the present, even just for this particular Chinese spy balloon. I don't understand all the technical. So I'll just accept that there's some collection abilities that having a balloon is better for than say a satellite. But how do or would the Chinese communicate with the balloon? How do they collect the data that it's collecting? Like, do they have to physically retrieve it? Is there some satellite uplink? Do you know how that works?
Yeah, I mean, I assume like a satellite, you could just, you know, use radio communication. There's actually Google for Project Loon tested out using laser communication between different balloons, which was a big challenge, but they managed to do it.
Wasn't there like going to be balloon internet at one point?
Yeah, so that's what Google was doing with Project Loon, where they were going to just kind of float these balloons up and they'd almost be, yeah, they would be able to provide internet. But the idea is they would provide internet to kind of areas that didn't have cell phone towers already. So like, so areas that are particularly poor or like rural or something like that. That program has been shut down. But my understanding is that the technology didn't so much fail. In fact, the technology, you know, is pretty incredible when you learn like what these AI algorithms were able to do and kind of like catching the wind and how they managed to figure out like this thing that sailors have been doing for thousands of years. The algorithm figured it out on its own. But the thing is, in order for something like that to work, you have to be really, really cheap. If your whole business model is, you know, we're going to provide to areas that don't have already have their own cell phone tower infrastructure, you know, so if it's like rural Kenya, then and my understanding is they just couldn't get the price low enough for it to be viable.
Sounds like a poor man's Starlink to a degree. Like, you know, it seems to be working for Ukraine, but maybe they could use this in other denied environments.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I think communications is a very, you know, at least in the military realm, where again you don't need the price to be quite as low for you know DOD or something. I think it definitely has a lot of potential.
Will, can you talk a little bit more about like the algorithms? Like, is there propulsion on the balloons, and like how does machine learning, you know, help with that?
Yeah, so this is why you don't see this stuff being used all the time, because, you know, you send it up and unless it has some sort of propulsion and there's challenges with doing propulsion and like, you know, using engines at that high of an altitude as well. But yeah, you know, you send it up, it just kind of goes wherever the wind takes it. But what's happened recently with AI is that these algorithms can kind of figure out how to adjust the altitude of the balloon to catch the right wind, because there will be these winds going in different directions, and you can use that to kind of go, or even kind of orbit around one spot for an extended period of time. And you know, I know that in some cases these balloons have been able to stay up there for like 300 days.
And they can do that without propulsion, without any.
Yes, yeah. It's just It's just a matter of going up and down. You don't need propellers or anything like that. Yeah,
I mean, that's crazy. But there aren't like weather reports for like 50,000 feet versus 60,000 feet, or are there? Like, what's your data?
That was one of the challenges with doing it, getting the data. I know DARPA had a project called ALTA, which was using laser sensors to kind of collect data and kind of collect information, about wind patterns.
Can you talk a little bit about how much research have you done in this? And one thing I've always experienced kind of in DC realm is like, I do a little bit of work and then someone comes to me and like treats me like an expert on something, but I'm like, I'm not an expert on this. I just happened to write one thing, you know, like what was your experience with that?
Yeah, I definitely feel that same way where, a lot of my knowledge is basically coming from these two papers that I had in my original thread, which were written by Air Force officers back in like the 2000s, talking about this. And then the rest is just kind of media reporting. You know, after reading those, I got into the media reporting about Project Loon and a lot of the other things that were going on in the commercial sector. I feel like, you know, I used to just kind of read, just go on the internet and Google this stuff for a while. And I guess I was the only person in the national security space doing this, because, you know, I always felt like this was something that was a bigger deal than people were talking about. Everyone wanted to talk about hypersonics or, you know, autonomous drones or anything. And I'm like, hey, balloons are important. And I think up until now, I get kind of these very blank stares for people. But yeah, full disclosure, I mean, I'm not an aerospace engineer or anything. I've never professionally worked on any of these projects. So you know, do keep that in mind.
Well, I'm looking forward to the day when you're managing a $5 million balloon budget, Will. Another thing I wanted to ask was, I want to come back to this like balloon versus satellite capability question, because it seems like balloons have a lot going for them. Are people biased because like they've seen up and they think it's silly versus like, you know, satellites just seem cooler? Like, do you have a theory of why balloons don't get more love?
I mean, I think part of it might just be like, okay, if your like whole job revolves around satellites, you wouldn't necessarily be too big on this kind of thing coming around. And, you know, there's a much more entrenched interest in, you know, in satellites, especially now that we have this, I mean, the Space Force's reason for existence is satellites. And one interesting thing I've noted is actually the service, in my view, that's been doing the most work on this is the Army, actually, not the Air Force. And I think that might be due to, you know, they don't necessarily have the same institutional bias towards satellites. But I'd also point out that, again, this is a very, very new thing. And so far, a lot of the people kind of working on this have been thinking of it, you know, for commercial purposes, like providing internet. And I think I might just be kind of weird looking at this and being like, hey, this could allow us to kill people more effectively. So it's a very recent technology.
Well, the Army's been, I mean, they had the J, I remember I did a cost estimate on the J-Lens program, which was just like an aerostat. It was just like a balloon that sits above a base to do cruise missile defense. And then one day got loose from Aberdeen and wreaked havoc into Pennsylvania because it's tethered, right? And so the tether just kept being dragged along. And you see these pictures of like, it's just like taking out poles and all this stuff and like all these people lost power. And then they're just like, we're going to shut down the project. And I think that was like the end of balloons, but the Army was kind of looking at it from a different perspective. That's why I like kind of having multiple services, but maybe are you going to be advocating, you know, maybe we need some balloon programs going on? What other types of things is the military doing?
Yeah, so I believe the fiscal year 23 budget had about $27 million, which is, you know, kind of chump change for the Pentagon, but still much larger than it was before. And it was in like the single digit millions. So, I mean, there is work being done on this. I think Jalen's was definitely a big thing, because anytime I bring this up to people who are kind of in the know, they're like, oh, but Jalen's. I'm like, yeah, but this isn't tethered. So, like, it's different. And the other thing too to also keep in mind is that, you know, balloons are not completely replacing satellites anytime soon. I don't believe they could fully get like that. We can just kind of get rid of the Space Force or get rid of the NRO. I mean, for one thing, as we've seen with the political response here, there's just a political difference in how people politically react when there's a balloon in their airspace versus, you know, spy satellites going overhead every day.
Hey there, China Talk listeners. This is Tracy Alloway.
And I'm Jill Wiesenthal, and we are the co-hosts of Bloomberg's Odd Lots podcast.
Yep, and if you enjoy China Talk, we think that you'll like Odd Lots too.
We have engaging conversations on everything from semiconductors to trade to AI to macroeconomic policy, and we always have the perfect guest.
Yep, you can check us out at Odd Lots on all the podcast platforms or Bloomberg.com/Odd Lots.
Let's come back to that.
Airspace. Yeah, so I was going to ask, like, does the U.S. use similar balloons against China? And does China do this frequently, or is this a rare occurrence? Do we know?
From what I've seen reporting that says that, yes, this is perhaps a pretty frequent occurrence from China. This is kind of the first that got into the news. And in fact, a lot of people have argued that a lot of, like, the UFO military sightings were actually most likely Chinese balloons. So I don't think this is, you know, that new. It's just this was, like, a lot more noticeable, and that, like, people could, like, look up and take pictures of it this time. As in terms of what the U.S. does, I mean, again, I know there's experiments being done. That's, you know, kind of what my original Twitter thread that I made was talking about. There's conceptual work, but in terms of anything like actually any fielded capability, I am not aware of anything that U.S. military fields.
Well, I can't believe, you know, like the Tic Tac. I doubt that aviators are you know, thinking that the Tic Tac and a balloon are they're just like messing that up, right? So, like, which UAPs, you know, unidentified aerial phenomena are you talking about? You think that might be balloons, just like people on the ground thinking it, or actual military people?
Yeah, even some of the I try to remember this. This was an article in the War Zone about it, and they're talking about how, like, some of these report some of the images might actually, you know, so the infrared images might actually be balloons, and some of the reports of, like, oh, it's like flying like supersonic without making a sonic boom, that could potentially be like electronic warfare packages on them. So it's like it's like your sensors aren't actually like working properly. I was not one who
that's
made
interesting.
This argument, but it is, yeah.
Given that I guess the use of balloons, or by the Chinese at least, and maybe by the U.S. is not all that abnormal. Is the U.S. overreacting now, today, by postponing Blinken's trip because of a balloon? And why? I mean, this is probably just purely speculation, but if this has happened before, why is this one getting all this press? Like, did it get too low or something? Like, why now?
Yeah, I mean, it's very big, for one thing. That's kind of what surprised me when I saw photos. It's like, you can make these packages much smaller, and I'm not sure why they didn't. If you compare it to, like, you know, Worldview Stratolite or something, this seems like a rather large payload, and it does seem to be flying rather low. In terms of, you know, was it the right call for Blinken to, you know, postpone his trip? I mean, I think that's a bit above my pay grade, but I wouldn't say it's an overreaction in the sense that this kind of capability, like the demonstration of this capability, is absolutely something to worry about. And I think, you know, again, you know, we have to think about operating under much more persistent PLA ISR than perhaps we're used to. And, you know, ISR capabilities, again, we don't have in my view, do not have a very good cost effective counter to yet. And we also have to, again, consider, can they do strikes well beyond at ranges that would have previously been unthinkable? And perhaps the idea of just saying, oh, you know, these are the red rings of death. And, you know, as a DF-26 can fly this far, and then anything beyond that, you know, we'll just keep, you know, bombers and fly them out of Hawaii or something, and they'll be safe. I mean, I think we need to really do need to rethink those assumptions.
But this balloon, the one today, is probably not an armed balloon, right? It's just a surveillance balloon.
Probably not. But again, you can definitely arm. I mean, again, we were talking about the Japanese. NASA had a balloon that could carry up to 8,000 pounds to an altitude above 100,000 feet. Yeah, you could definitely. One of the articles that actually got me into this wasn't even talking about them for surveillance. It was suggesting using them as close air support platforms and just like sticking a bunch over like Iraq and Afghanistan, and soldiers could just kind of call in bombs whenever they need it. And unlike, you know, a plane, it never had, you know, it can stay up there much longer. So yeah, I think kinetic use is definitely something that we should be thinking about.
And evidently cannon. They're hard to shoot down, right?
Yes, I think energy weapons should probably provide a solution there, but we might have some work cut out for us on that.
So for the uninitiated, Will, what is an energy weapon?
So really, I mean, you know, the sci-fi lasers, microwaves. Microwaves could at least would fry the electronics, and then lasers, you know, you could actually use it to kind of heat up and destroy the balloon itself. So far, they've been kind of relatively short range, used for things like defense against small drones. Though I do think, you know, considering laser or microwave weapons, if not specifically designed to destroy these high altitude balloons, at least capable of doing so, I think is something that that probably deserves more attention.
So, yeah, Epirus has a microwave thing that they just got a $64 million contract from the Army. They can apparently knock out hundreds of small UASs with that thing. But then the directed energy one is funny. A few years ago, they put a laser on a C-130 and they popped a balloon from altitude. And it was just like, well, maybe that's more relevant. Like, people were joking at it because it's like, oh, you popped a balloon, who cares? It's like, well, maybe there's some utility to that.
I want to throw the policy question back at you, Gerard. You know, this, I don't think this is the same as putting nukes on Cuba. What do you think, what do you think just happened?
My gut is that something happened that was too politically sensitive, even for domestic reasons, for the White House to tolerate appeasing on such a short time frame. So if this had happened, say, 72 hours ago, it's plausible to me that Blinken would still be going. But because it happened just, you know, the day before he was supposed to leave, there was probably emergency sessions at the NSC to figure out what to do about this. My personal view is that at least from a bilateral perspective, it was not justified to cancel the trip. I don't think this changes anything about any negotiations. I think that the internal debate was, I know this is purely speculation, but my gut is there were probably some political arguments about, you know, Biden looking weak or whatever. If we went in face of this balloon that was getting so much attention overnight. But to me, it seems like an overreaction.
And Gerard, can we talk through a little bit of your balloon bloodlust? Why did you want to blow this thing up so badly?
Well, look, I believe you could believe two things at once, right? One is that Blinken should have gone anyway, regardless of the balloon, but even with the balloon. But two, that we should also blow up the balloon, because if once NORAD announced that he was tracking it and saying, oh, it's also a Chinese balloon, it would at least be comforting for me to know that we could shoot it down. Evidently, it's not clear whether we can do so, or at least so in a sort of economical way. But it does strike me as a bit troubling that, you know, Will is saying it took the Canadians like 6 days to down a balloon. I would think we would have the ability to do that, particularly if you know, these things actually can be armed. It's just pretty embarrassing. And so, I mean, I was tweeting about this half joking, but I do kind of want to shoot it down and see what happens.
I did quite like the idea of Blinken going and just like presenting like a cloth of balloon to his interlocutor, being like,
"Yes, thank you.
Just wanted
to
return this for you."
Yeah,
yeah. It's like, you know, Amazon Prime. You got 30 days free shipping. I know it went off track, so like, we'll just help you out here.
It, I mean, to be clear, like if the Chinese government had denied it was theirs or had not, you know, quote, issued a regret statement, I would have been more inclined to say that, you know, this was out of line, but because they did. And also, you know, the State Department said today that this they acknowledge the regret thing. And if what Will is saying is true, that this happens before, then that itself can't be the issue. The issue is that it was detected and it became public. That's the real issue.
Yeah. Will, Eric, anything on this?
Come on, Will, you're the balloon guy. You got it.
I think I'm good. I guess I just say I hope that this starts. I mean, is weird being like the balloon guy, because like I said, I don't really think I'm like a subject matter expert, but it's just like I realize, oh my god, like almost nobody else in the national security space has even like thought about this really. So I hope that the attention both helps us develop these capabilities, you know, kind of beyond like JLINS and tethered things, and actually looking at kind of more advanced free-floating designs using AI. And I hope we also, you know, do start to, you know, whether that's the laser on the C-130. I mean, I was, you know, kind of tweeted that, yeah, maybe something, some sort of airborne laser might be the solution. But, you know, whatever it is, we got to counter it. And we've got to have this capability ourselves. So I hope that this starts a conversation, and that people smarter and more powerful than we do more on this.
Well, Will, this may or may not sort of increase the salience of balloons in the national security conversation, but one thing it certainly already has done is improve your dating prospects. You recently tweeted out a Hinge response from a long dead match who said, "Sorry, random late reply. Are you balloon guy on Twitter? I apologize. This is the most DC way to message someone on Hinge, I am sure." I don't know how this gets any better for you, Will.
Exactly. People say dating in DC sucks, but I think this is a good counter argument to that.
What are we left with here after the balloon gate saga closes?
Well, we're left with a lot of questions. So one is when or if Secretary Blinken will be going to China. I assume he will and hope he will. But with the balloon gate itself, you know, where did it come from? Was it PLA? Why now? If this wasn't a routine thing, was it just not coordinated with Beijing, or is it just someone, you know, acting unilaterally? What's the background here? And, you know, what is the U.S. assessment? Are they overreacting, et cetera? So there's a lot of stuff we don't know here. And again, I think that the fact this happened so quickly ahead of the planned departure explains the U.S. reaction. But to me, honestly, I don't think of this as being that big of a deal.
Eric, I was curious, like, once China tested the hypersonics, like what that did for the DC conversation around hypersonics, and what might this balloon saga do for Will's dreams of a massive, balloon investment plus up.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, policy people and defense people, we are envious, right? Like if they have a shiny new toy, we want it too. But, you know, it really did get me thinking. It's like, man, is this thing really that survivable? Because like, you look at certain missions like air target moving indicator, where we will like have a sortie of six or more F-35s, and you need a tanker on station just to keep two like forward deployed, so you can see whether there's some J-20s or whatever coming forward, right? And to see what's in the air. I mean, that's a lot of money to keep multiple F-35s up there just moving around at like $40,000 an hour, just to be sensing up forward. If you could just put balloons up there, right? Very low cost, very survivable, same, you know, EW and sensing packages on them, and relay it back. Like, why not? Like, does that make sense? Right? Like, how many more missions can this thing actually take forward that we're just like burning, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars every hour? Just to do something with like high-end equipment where we don't need to burn out engines and airframes of F-35s to go do it. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like it's worth some analysis.
What's our balloon song outro?
The theme from Up, I think, right? It's gotta be, gotta have something from
it's us. It's not like a warlike balloon song though.
Balloons are lighthearted. When are you gonna have a warlike balloon song?
Well, this is the problem.
That's more you're gonna get.
Right. Yeah.
This is the problem. If we had Dolly, we could ask it for a warlike balloon song, and it would give it to us.
There you go.
But we don't have those models aren't public yet, sadly. All right, I'm gonna call it. Thanks so much for being a part of the inaugural edition of Balloon Talk, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure.
Good to be with you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.